I started playing in Dallas, Texas, Oak Cliff to be exact, with my brother Jimmy Vaughn from the Fabulous Thunderbirds. That was, I guess it was about 1962 when we started. Just did it all by, actually, just by listening and keeping trying to do the best we could.
Who were some of your early influences and people that you've admired?
God, Albert King, Freddie King, B.B. King, Lonnie Mack, Hubert Sumlin, Howlin' Wolf, Muddy Waters, Buddy Guy, my brother, Kenny Burrell, Grant Green, Django Reinhardt, Lazy Lester, Frankie Lee Sims, Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton. There's all kinds of influences.
You grew up on the blues then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Some of the work that you've been known for besides your own albums have been with other major recording artists.
Mm-hmm.
David Bowie, what was that like?
I had a lot of fun in that album. My parts were overdubs. When he did his vocals, I would get a feel for the tune while he was putting the vocals down, and then I would go in, and most of it was done in one take.
And you didn't join or didn't stay for the whole tour?
Well, what happened was I was offered the tour playing guitar in his band, in a way where he asked me how long we as a band, Double Trouble, like to play opening shows, and would I be too tired to play with his band after we'd already done a show. And that was the premise as of how I was asked to do the tour. And when I started seeing that it wasn't going to be possible for our band to do the tour, that's when I started having second thoughts. It was no wait till the last minute to quit, you know. It's unfortunate that it couldn't have worked out where we could have both done the things that we were asking each other to do, you know. But doing the album was a lot of fun, and I'm really glad that I got to do it.
All right. Now you're on another album out called the Famous Blue Raincoat Album. So
yeah.
About that experience.
Jennifer Warren. She's great. She's incredible. You couldn't meet a nicer person and easier to work with. That came about, for years and years I've been friends with the producer of the album, Roscoe Beck. Roscoe is an incredible bass player, not to mention he's a great guitar player. Plays several other instruments, but he goes way back with Jennifer and as well. And we'd gotten in contact with each other. We stay in touch every chance we get. And I'd been doing a Tina Marie session that night, and he came over to the Tina Marie session, and from there he and I went over and did Jennifer's and had a blast. I played it three or four different ways, just, you know, did one turned up with a wah-wah pedal and did one quieter, smoother version, you know. I just because they weren't sure what exactly they wanted, and we were just kind of seeing what happened with it, you know, on the song. And we just kind of picked and chose, I don't know how to say it, from the right, you know, just to see what came up with the right thing. And we had a lot of fun doing it.
When people ask you to work on their projects, what is it that they're looking for from you? How do they approach you on that?
Well, hopefully they're asking me to be me, because that's all I know how to do. You know, I like to experiment around and just see what sounds the best for the song, because if they want me to play on a song, obviously they care about how I'm going to look at it. And when I'm playing on someone else's material, my job is to make them happy with what I do. And I'm just really glad that I've been able to work with as many people as possible, you know, as I have.
All right. And of course you got your own band, which is world renowned at this point.
Well, thank you. Okay, it's a pleasure to play all over the world. You know, there's all kinds of different perspectives that we can gain by traveling around and meeting people and talking with people, jamming with people.
What was the first big break for Devil Trouble?
Well, there were several things that happened all at the same time. The Stones seeing us and having us do this party in New York City. Jerry Wexler seeing us in Austin and convincing Claude Knobs of the Montreux Festival to hire us, even though we didn't have an album. We're the only band, as far as I know, still the only band that's ever played there without a record. John Hammond's interest in us. From his son, John Hammond, John Paul Hammond, bringing a tape of the show back, playing it for his father, and those connections being made. There's not necessarily just one break. There was a lot of things that started to happen all at the same time, and we're very grateful for those things.
Have you been surprised by the unusually great response from overseas, and has there been one particular country where you said, wow, I didn't even know they knew about me there?
Well, Japan was quite an experience. Every place we've played has been quite an experience, to be honest. It's been a lot of fun. A lot of people everywhere in the world that we've gone. I guess it's that we honestly want to do the best that we can. That appeals to so many people, because what we're doing is honest. We're trying to do the best we can to keep a very valid form of music living, not just alive, but living, present day. You know, and there must be a lot of people out there that want the same thing. You know,
everybody's, as with any group or artist, they slap their descriptions and their labels on the type of music. How would you describe your sound to someone who hadn't heard it yet?
God, I don't like to put labels on it. It's just music. You know, it's just the best music we can do.
What are some of the ingredients that you throw into that musical stew that you guys cook up?
Blues, rhythm and blues, soul, rock and roll, a little bit of jazzy playing here and there. But it's the emotion and the honesty that we're trying to put in it. It's not just an act, you know. If it was just an act, or if it was just for fame, there would be no heart in it, you know. There would be no heart in it. No, if I don't believe in something that I'm playing, I can't play it to the best of my ability, because I don't care about it as much.
Has there been one gig on the road, now you've been on the road for a while, that really stood out in your mind?
One recently that really stands out in my mind wasn't a Double Trouble gig, but it was a special that I got to do with B.B. King and Albert King. The lineup as it was B.B. King, Albert King, Eric Clapton, Paul Butterfield, Phil Collins, Dr. John, B.B.'s band, of course, Chaka Khan, Gladys Knight, Etta James, Billy Ocean, and God, there was somebody else, and I can't think of who it was. But it was all of us at the same time.
Where was that?
It was here in L.A. At Ebony Theater. It was for an HBO Cinemax special called a Blues Session, and with all the musicians and singers, we had all of our equipment, and everybody faced each other in the band, and the audience was on the perimeter.
Wow, what an amazing sight!
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Is that aired on HBO?
It will be in August, I believe.
Can't wait to see that. What are some of your future projects?
We're about to do another studio album in the fall. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to doing an album with my brother Jimmy Vaughn. Looks like I'm about to be working on a little bit on Stevie Wonder's new album. I'm looking forward to doing an album with Albert King. And living life, you know, one day at a time.
You're a busy guy.
Yeah.
Are you going to be part of the Texas Jam Festival that's going to be happening?
I'd like to be. I'm not sure that we're going to get the chance to.
Yeah, Let me ask you, we're doing a special highlight on the state of Texas and some of the mm-hmm. famous rockers that have come out of Texas. What does your home state mean to you?
It's home. It's, there's no place like Texas, and I know that's a cliche, but that's where all my roots are. Not all of them, but majority of them. And no matter how appealing another place can be, yeah, I still am drawn back to Texas.
People go to Texas and they say you gotta try the chili, you gotta, you know, have a Texas barbecue. Are you into that? And is there a
sure.
particular spot back home that is the best for you?
Oh, Sam's Barbecue. Sam's Barbecue is it. And now that's in Austin. Also, there's a man named C-Boy that he used to run a place called the Rome Inn where the Thunderbirds and Double Trouble played quite a bit when we first started. That between there and Antone's were the main two places. Well, I guess there was Soap Creek, Antone's, and the Rome Inn. The Rome Inn and Antone's, they were both many times we would be playing, there'd be two people there, you know, on up to, and then on other nights it would be jam-packed, you know, but C-Boy would run the place and also cook for us, you know, and he was a great friend as well. And there was, but his barbecue's right on too.
Now tell me about you were in a beach movie of all things.
Stop. Yeah. Well, Frank Mancuso, the producer, and Becky Mancuso, his wife, who is also in charge with the musical direction and a lot of it. I had worked with Becky when we were doing the Gung Ho soundtrack. And from that period of time, I had a more honorary reputation because I was not only caught up in lots of things, but caught up in the drugs and the alcohol, and was quite a bit more ornery and hard to work with, I'm sure. And that it ended up working out, the work part of it had worked out, even though I had a little harder to deal with attitude at the time. Frank had been wanting me to play on Pipeline in this beach movie, Back to the Beach. And he kept insisting on me doing this, you know. And they kept saying, man, I don't know if this is going to work or not, you know. And he kept saying, man, try it. And it just worked out real well because I got the chance to get back into working in that field. And at the same time, it became obvious that I'd changed a lot of my ways and attitudes. And I'm just real grateful for the whole thing, you know, because we've all become real good friends. And it's just, you know, it was a godsend, you know.
Yeah. What was it like working with a couple of 60s teen idols?
Dick Dale's a character. Yeah. He's a character. Are you talking about Annette and Frankie Avalon? They still look just like they used to. And they're great.
It's amazing how they preserve themselves.
Yeah.
All right. What made you clean up? What happened there?
I pushed it to the point of no return, and luckily I ran to a brick wall. You know, a lot of people pursue it to death or insanity, complete insanity. People having to change their diapers. Luckily, I collapsed in every way possible and burnt down. I say luckily because that gave me a place to start from, to build a way back. Through a 12-step program that gives a person the tools to straighten itself out. But actually, through working the steps, all I really provide is the willingness to be honest with myself and grow in that sense and get things back into perspective. The steps do the rest.
Your advice to young people who might be doing like a weekend partying, or is there such thing as just casual recreational partying?
Yeah, there is normal drinkers, and they have a couple of drinks and they've had plenty. For me, I'm an alcoholic. It's another way. It's one drink leads to another. One's too many, and 100 ain't enough. The advice would be, if if there is a problem, if you can tell at all that you can't, that a couple of drinks is not enough, just God, take care of yourself and realize that. Try seeing early on when people say that you drink too much or you use too much, to really pay attention to those things, because there's no sense in going all the way to the very ends of pain to find out that you can be happy.
That's great advice. Thank you for being so candid and open about that. That's really
no problems.
Important.
It helps me. It helps me to talk about it. You see, if there's one person who listens and realizes and relates to the fact that they could have a disease that's called alcoholism or addiction, and it is a clinical disease. It is, after a certain point, the human body no longer breaks these things down as a normal drinker or as such, and it is a disease that can only be stopped through action, you know, admitting that there is something wrong and realizing that your life is unmanageable, you know, and that's the only way. There's no quick cure. It is once a person has pushed it this far, or in fact, there are people this is just as common, where it's the disease once it is turned as a disease in a person, it is hereditary. An alcoholic's son or daughter can have these same genes, and it's in their chemical makeup, in their genes, that they are potential alcoholics or addicts. And this disease is there if tapped, you know. And if tapped, it can run rapid in a person, you know. And the only way to stop it is to get help with it. It's not something that a person can stop with willpower. There is a big difference in being dry and being sober. Sober means eventually being happy and sane. Dry means in torment, you know, because the actual drinking or using is just a symptom of the problems that we have in the first place that cause us to not just socially drink, but to get off into it, you know.
Dive headfirst into the bottle.
Yes.
Let's get back to the business at hand, and that is your tour that you're on.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about the size and the scope of this tour and some of the cities you're hitting.
Well, so far we've worked our way from the Northeast out here to California. We are the first part of it were some of them smaller venues, which there are a lot of. We love to play clubs. We love to play smaller venues, we love to play arenas, we love to play anywhere, you know. The second leg of the tour, which starts in June the 5th, is the Northeast. And we do the Northeast, swing across and do some gigs around Colorado and back up again. We'll be doing more jazz festivals on the June part of the tour, June and early July. Then there's a lot of jazz festivals, a lot of bigger venues. Then during July we do some pre-production for the album. Tour during August, and cut in September, and possibly October, for a release early '88. Hopefully we get a break around Christmas, you know.
When you do have spare time, what do you like to do?
For me these days, it may sound corny to some people, but it's not at all. It's what saves my life, is I can relax by working these steps and going to some meetings and trying to take care of myself for a change.
That is a full-time job in a way. project.
Mm-hmm. It's a lifelong job.
Stevie, thanks again.
Thank you. Time.